All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Veterans Radio. It is my privilege and honor to be talking to you this Sunday afternoon in a beautiful Michigan. We're very happy with our weather finally. And our football team won yesterday by the hair of their chinny chin chin. I don't know about that other team, though, in Detroit. I don't know, we know where they went, some foreign country. But we're very privileged today to have joining us in the studios is one of the newest, I guess you could say, recipients of a Medal of Honor. It's not quite official yet, but we're working on it. And we're going to talk about that story in a moment. But also joining me in the studio is a good friend, Tom Reich. Tom, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
My privilege to be on Veterans Radio with you, Dale. Thank you very much.
All right. We've got a couple of events that are going to be coming up, and I really wanted to ask Tom, especially because there's a big one coming up here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on November 11th. And tell us all about it.
Certainly. The event is called Service Above Self, Honoring Our Veterans. It's at Hill Auditorium. It's a absolutely free event. It's hosting the University of Michigan alumni band, and also Concordia University, the Dick and Janes, which is an a cappella group from the university, and also an a cappella singer who's going to sing God Bless America.
And what are we having this special event for?
To honor our veterans, but more importantly, to raise awareness and funds for the need of a Fisher House here in Ann Arbor, which is very similar to a Ronald McDonald House for outpatients, families, and caregivers.
Okay, so there is no Fisher House for the Ann Arbor VA. In fact, you mentioned earlier that there aren't any Fisher Houses in Ann Arbor at all.
Or in the state of Michigan.
Oh,
we have
okay.
One of the top military populations in the United States that are veterans, yet we have no facility for them. California has a large number. Texas has a large number. Florida has a large number. Yet Michigan has none, and we're trying to remedy that.
Okay. So this Fisher House is going to be for the family members also to stay. If somebody's coming to the Ann Arbor VA for treatment, they're going to be able to have some place to stay, and they don't have to put out the money to stay at a local hotel, motel, whatever it happens to be.
Absolutely. And the problem here in Ann Arbor, as you probably well know, with our many events, there is a huge shortage of rooms. But more importantly, the cost of those rooms gets so grossly inflated at certain times of years that people from many parts of the state that come here for treatment can't afford to stay.
Right. I understand that. And there's a couple of other events going on. Thanks, Tom. Hopefully everybody will show up there at Hill Auditorium. That's Hill Auditorium here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the University of Michigan campus. And what time does it start?
It's doors open at 6 o'clock. And if you go to the website, www.vetsatthehill.org, you can also find out how you can attend a VIP program as well prior to the opening of the doors.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a great event, and I encourage everybody to go. I'm hoping that we can make it ourselves, because I think that Veterans Day is a pretty busy day for most of us that are sitting in the room right now, and we will try to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, a couple of other real quick events that are coming up is we've got a hiring event for veterans and their families, and this is going to be held at Washtenaw Community College on Tuesday of this coming week, November 3rd, 2015. There's an employer panel where employers who are looking to hire veterans can come in and talk for 9:15, and then a hiring event starts at 10 o'clock and runs until 1 p.m., and participating employers include FedEx, HDR Incorporated, Truven Health Analysis, Nexiet, Verizon Wireless, and many, many more. And this is at the on Washtenaw Community College's campus at the Morris Lawrence Building, and that is at 4800 East Huron River Drive, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Tuesday, November 3rd, from 10 to 1 o'clock. You guys looking for jobs? You men and women need help finding jobs? This is a place to go where we can help you out. The other thing is from our good friends at Ward Church up in Northville, Michigan. Coming up this Saturday morning at November 7th from 8:30 a.m. is going to be a breakfast for veterans. This is something that they always seem to do. It's their military appreciation breakfast. Saturday, November 7th, 2015. Speaker is going to be Ken Wells. Ken was an Air Force pilot in Vietnam, was shot down, and spent 16 months in a North Vietnamese POW camp. And it says that his faith got him through that experience. We hope that you will go to this. It is $10 per person. For more information, you can go to wardchurch.org/militarybreakfast. That's Ward Church, which is at 40,000 Six Mile Road in Northville, Michigan. Sounds like a great opportunity to get a good breakfast, hear probably an amazing story, and let these people honor you as veterans. It's very important for them to do this. So that's it for that. We're going to be coming back in just a moment with Colonel Chuck Kettles, who is going to be hopefully receiving his Medal of Honor in a short period of time, and he's a fellow helicopter pilot. So after we take this break, you're going to hear a little segment that talks about helicopter pilots, and then we'll get into our interview. We'll be right back after this.
He blesses the boys as they stand in line. The smell of gun grease and their bayonets, they shine. He's there to help them all that he can. To make them feel wanted, he's a good holy man.
And we are back on Veterans Radio talking to a fellow sky pilot sitting across the table from me right now, and that is retired United States Army Colonel Charles Chuck Kettles. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, whatever time it is. I get so flustered when things don't necessarily go the way that I want them to. But, Chuck, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you.
Also joining me in the studio right now is Bill Volano. Bill, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
And, Bill, you got involved in this whole project. Can you tell me how you got involved in this whole project?
Well, I'm the coordinator of the Veterans History Project for the Ypsilanti Rotary Club, and I had the honor of interviewing Chuck probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. Well,
closer to 10 or 12.
10 or 12. Oh, okay. Wow. How time goes. I was impressed with his story. And from there, I went to one of the people that he talked about, Ron Schreck, mm-hmm. who lived in Maryland. And from there, it just kept snowballing and finding out a whole bunch of things, and then I decided that his award was downgraded when he was in Vietnam, and I thought that there ought to be something to upgrade it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm a David Letterman fan, so I don't know how many times I've seen him honor Medal of Honor winners. And taking nothing away from them, I compare what they were awarded their medal for and what Chuck did, and it seemed to me that they were kind of in a picnic by comparison.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, Chuck. You're back in 1967, 66?
It's 15 May. 67, yes.
Okay, so on the 15th of May, 1967, I was just beginning basic training at that time. So tell us a little bit about that day.
Well, it started out fairly early in the morning with what may have been regarded as a routine mission, where we inserted through two flights with eight helicopters, a total of 80 troops were inserted in a landing zone on one side of a hill mass. The troops moved around the base of that hill mass and into a valley with a dry riverbed, and were ambushed. So probably 2 hours into that project, they called for reinforcements and to remove the wounded that were there. So we, again, with 8 helicopters, went back in with another 80 troops and pulled out the wounded. And then that deteriorated further over the course of the day, so late in the day, when sun was beginning to set, they called for emergency extraction of the remaining 44 troops that were there. 4 of those were crew members that belonged to my platoon, and they had taken the motor round on the mast of the helicopter, and it burned in the LZ. And the LZ, the landing zone that is, was such that we went in there in a trail formation, and I was lead, of course. And when the trail aircraft commander called and said all troops were on board, I lifted out of there with the entire 6 aircraft. 5 of those had been borrowed from a sister company, the 161st Assault Helicopter Company, because we in the 176th had only 1 flyable, which was the one I had.
You broke them. Somebody broke them.
Well,
somebody threw stuff at them, I think.
Well,
really,
yes, Charlie was about as ambitious as we were, mm-hmm. and had successfully peppered our aircraft to where we were down to 1 when they called for their emergency extraction. So therefore, we had to contact the 161st through the battalion and get their support. They came with crews, of course, and we rendezvoused in the area and went in to pick up the 44. When we departed that LZ at about 1,500 feet and headed back toward the base, which was at Duck Foe, and the medevac med system was back there, the command and control aircraft, I'm not sure who went on board that, whether it was the battalion commander or brigade commander, informed me that there were 8 troops that didn't get on board the helicopters. And it had been pretty chaotic, so not surprising, but these 8 had been down in the riverbed doing the last defensive positions to as the helicopters were loaded. I had on my helicopter only 1 of the ground troops. But anyway, I had no idea where the rest of them were, but 8 of them were on the ground yet.
This is, and you're flying in a D model. Just to talk to our audience, you're flying in a D model Huey at this time.
Correct? That's correct.
Right, and that didn't quite have as much power as the H model that I was fortunate to fly. And you were up in the Highlands.
And that's correct.
So a little difficult to get off the ground sometimes.
They were in underpowered by comparison with the H model.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Dash 11 engine and in the D model and Dash 13 engine
right. In
the H model. So anyway, at about 1,500 feet, and I had only 1 grunt on board, plus the crew, of course, I told number 2 to take over the lead and take them back to the hospital pad or duck foe strip as appropriate. And by then, of course, the gunships had departed the area. The Air Force had departed, and the artillery had shut down because the LZ was clear as far as they were concerned. But anyway, we still had 8 troops on the ground that certainly wanted to get out of there. So I broke off, and they were to the left of me, and I was in the left seat. I took control from the co-pilot. I say co-pilot, he was the unit flight standardization instructor pilot. So certainly well qualified, and he flew much of the mission since I had the three radios to deal with and the rest of the business. Anyway, it broke off, and I took control of it because I could see the troops. And put it into a sharp left turn into the LZ again. And as we approached the touchdown point, shortly thereafter, why a mortar round went off just off the nose and took out the chin bubble and part of the left and right windshield. And I later learned that some of the shrapnel went into the back and hit some of those the troops who had been on board. My co-pilot, Bree Sechrist, when I was satisfied that we had all eight, took over the controls and began to depart. The D-model violently fishtailed. And I wasn't sure why, but anyway, I simply assumed the controls at that point. I wasn't sure whether his anti-torque controls had been lost, and I later learned that while the helicopter tended to fishtail rather violently, one of the ground troops got thrown out of the left side and caught the skid as he was going out. And his buddies brought him back in. So it was not exactly your storybook departure.
Not your textbook takeoff.
No. And the helicopter being overloaded, the engine couldn't maintain RPM on the rotor blades that would give us a normal departure. And the terrain was such that you couldn't make what we would call a normal running takeoff.
Right.
So as the rotor RPM would dissipate, we'd trade that altitude, what was a couple of feet, for rotor RPM. Then when the rotor RPM would get back up to a normal, we'd then lift again, and what we're looking for is translational lift.
Right.
Where
the aircraft actually gets a good bite of the air and takes off.
Yeah, because the air is dirty in a hover because it's rolling up over the blades. And simply trading altitude, a few feet, for rotor RPM, then rotor RPM for forward speed because we need about 40 knots. And it was way over gross, and I knew that. And it flew like a 2.5-ton truck. And so after bouncing off the riverbed, which was not smooth, and doing that about 5 or 6 times, then it finally got into translational lift. If it was going to go at all, it would go then, and it did. Now, not a real steep departure, but we didn't need it. All we needed to do was get the hell out of there.
That's the name of that. This is sort of like the way Charlie's describing it. It's kind of leapfrogging, bouncing, almost bouncing down this stream bed before he actually had enough airspeed and altitude to take off. And you didn't have to go high. You probably just went to the top of the trees and just went like a bat.
Well, it was just down the valley, and finally we got enough altitude to go back to base. But
that's quite the story.
After he described this to me, I was, of course, in awe, and all he had to say was, piece of cake.
You know, we're laughing about this, and I've never been in a situation as bad as that, but one of the things that I noticed that really caught my attention in the article that was in M Live talking about the upgrading of your award, and of course I left that in the other room, but it's that you can't leave them behind.
No, we're not going to leave them behind.
No, we could never leave them behind, and whether we had 10 people on board the aircraft and there was only room, there was one guy still in the LV, somebody would go back and get him. and whether the guns were gone, as you mentioned, because they ran out of ammunition, they ran out of fuel, they got sent off to another mission, and that was just what we were taught. And I am in awe of you for your skills. And also, I don't know if people can, it's too bad it's not television, because I don't know if you can see my eyes going up and down and kind of getting a little excited here, because I can relate to many of the things that you were talking about. And so as a result of this, you were awarded, and I have to correct Bill here, you never win an award, you're always an award, you're a recipient, that you received the Distinguished Service Cross, which is number 2 on the list as far as awards for valor. How did you feel about, did you think about that at all, or did you just go out the next day and do the next mission?
No, I mean, that mission, as far as I was concerned, was finished and satisfactory, and those 44 names don't appear on the wall in Washington, and that in itself was gratification enough. On to whatever next. Now, the company commander said that evening, invited me to go have dinner with him, which was normal enough. And I figured he had something more on his mind than just dinner. But he said, Chuck, I'm going to move you in to be the operations officer. And I said, why is that? Because I'm quite happy where I am. He said, well, I figured maybe you could figure out what an assault helicopter company does without any helicopters. So I became the operations officer, which was not my cup of tea.
I would think not.
But anyway, it wasn't long after that, and the brigade needed a replacement for their brigade aviation officer. So again, I have dinner. I hesitated to have dinner with the company commander anymore.
I understand that.
But he said, you're going to be transferred up to be the brigade aviation officer. And I said, why is that? He said, well, because they've lost their brigade aviation officer and you're going to be the replacement. And I said, do I have anything to say about that? I'd just soon stay down here. He said, no, you don't. The general says that you're to be the brigade aviation officer. So
that was,
then I got...
You know, it's like taking a champion out of the ring and putting somebody else in it, it sounds to me.
I mean, I was quite happy being the platoon commander with 8 slicks and the crews. And that was more my forte than being up in the brigade and that level.
And plus, you get to fly.
Well, they gave me an H-23 to fly.
That's what I learned how to fly in.
That's what I learned to fly, too.
Holy smokes. That thing goes a whole, 50 miles an hour, maybe?
Well,
if you get out and run next to it,
that's only part of it. I mean, you're
no
out
armament.
There. You're out there by yourself with a carbine and a sidearm and.
I'm gonna have to find a picture. I have a picture of the OH-23 at home. I wish I'd known we were going to talk about this. People would not believe what this thing looks like. It's a bubble with a stick out the back, and that's about it.
Well, it's about the same as the H-13, which
that's
was
true.
Probably most people are familiar with from MASH and that sort
that's
of thing.
That's true. So you did 2 tours in Vietnam, and we're running out of time. I'm gonna keep you after the news if you don't mind.
Okay.
Do you mind? Can you guys do that? I'm gonna keep Chuck after the news. So if you could ask our next guest to just be patient, we'll bring her on shortly. But I want him to hear that thing also. All right, so when did you join the service originally?
Well, I was originally drafted for the Korean War in 1951.
And how did you get into aviation?
Well, went through OCS, and then they found that they were interested in pilots, so I went through flight training. But by the time I got to Korea, the war had been over about 5 months.
Right.
So I spent about 6 months in Korea, and then the entire Artura group moved to Japan.
Oh, okay.
And from there, I went to Thailand. And
oh, you got to go all kinds of places.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I joined the 32nd Engineer Topo Unit, which was making maps of Thailand and so on at that point.
Okay. So we need to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit with more Chuck and with Bill about this upgrade of his award to the Medal of Honor. I mean, I could sit here and talk with you for hours about helicopters. This stuff is fascinating to me. So we will take a break. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes with I'm wrapping it up. Goodbye.
Anybody here today who doesn't thrill to the sound of those blades? That familiar wop 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 is the soundtrack of our war, the lullaby of our younger days. To someone who spent his time in Nam with the grunts, I've got to tell you that noise was always a great comfort. It meant someone was coming to help. Someone was coming to get our wounded. Someone was coming to bring us water and ammo. Someone was coming to take our dead brothers home. And eventually, someone was coming to give us a ride out of hell. Even today, when I hear it, I stop, catch my breath, and think back to those days. I love you guys as only an infantryman can. No matter how bad things were, if we called, you came. Down through the green tracers and other visible signs of a real bad day, off to a real bad start. To us, you seemed beyond brave and fearless, that you would come to us in the middle of battle, in those flimsy, thin-skinned crates, and in the storm of fire, you would sit up there behind that thin plexiglass, seeming so patient and so calm and so vulnerable, waiting for the offloading and the onloading. We thought you were God's own lunatics, and we loved you. Still do. We're the fortunate ones. We survived when so many better men gave up their precious lives for us. We owe them a sacred debt to live each day to its fullest. What they're saying when you listen hard enough is this: we're at peace, and so should you be. And so should you be.
Little time tripping for a couple of people in the studio right now. I know that. That was Joe Gallagher, and Joe had been in Vietnam up in the I Drang Valley, actually, with Colonel Hal Moore. If you've read the book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young, he's part of that story. And so, Colonel Kettle, I wanted to thank you for being on Veterans Radio today. I'm sorry we don't have more time. We're going to get you back on and do this again. Bill Villano, thank you so much for the work that you did to get his award upgraded to the Congressional Medal of Honor, which is the highest thing in the world.
There were at least a half a dozen or more people who served with Chuck that submitted testimony to Congressman Dingell's office. And, I'm not modest about that, but really there's a lot of other people that deserve credit.
Well, there's a lot of people that served in Vietnam that some of them didn't get the credit that they deserve, and I know that you and I probably both feel the same way, that we were honored to serve, and we were honored to know these men and women that we had the opportunity to meet when we were there.
It was certainly an opportunity to serve, and the military had spent a great deal in training, just nothing more than myself, and nice to have an opportunity to pay back.
It is a good payback. And you represent all the things that are the best of America's military. So I want to thank you, and I salute you, sir.
Well, thank you.
And we will see you again on Veterans Radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right now, we've got to do a quick transition here. So if Nina's going to come over and help our guests leave right now. But joining me on the line right now, you know, we're talking about a lot of great activities that are going on in the military and what people in the civilian are doing for people in the military. And one of them is the Service Women's Action Network. And joining me on the line right now is the CEO of the Service Women's Action Network, SWAN, is Judy Patterson. Judy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hello, how are you?
I am terrific. Thank you very much for your patience in waiting. And we will.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I've known Chuck for quite a while, and as a fellow helicopter pilot, it's a great story. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited about what you are planning on doing. So tell me real quickly about SWAN, and then we'll move from there.
Sure. The Service Women's Action Network was started in 2009 by women veterans in New York City who were having difficulty getting the benefits that they believed they had that they deserved from the VA for issues relating to military sexual trauma. And the organization grew up very much a grassroots organization and was a service organization in its inception, providing legal and counseling services. Over time, that group realized that they could have a broader impact if they started to address some of the underlying policy issues. So they started, participating in Washington and working with Congress, the DOD, the administration. And over time, not only its focus not only shifted to Washington, but also the issues that SWAN addressed broadened. So today, we are a community network, and we advocate for the individual and collective needs of servicewomen, past, present, and future. And we take credit for opening jobs to servicewomen, for holding sex offenders accountable in the military justice system, for eliminating barriers to disability claims, and also for expanding access to services for a broad range of reproductive health care services.
Well, we've been talking, you know, here on Veterans Radio about some of the problems that some people have been having with the VA, and my understanding is that some of our women service veterans have been having more difficulty than the average.
Well, I think it starts with possibly not often always getting the level of respect that they're entitled to. If a woman veteran goes into a VA facility, we often hear that it's assumed that they're the spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're really about, what SWAN is really about, is continually monitor to make sure that women vets aren't shortchanged by the budget pressures that we know always exist. We're trying to ensure that we all know there are a lot of old physical structures that remain in use, and we want to make sure that when they are rehabbed or replaced, that women's needs are taken into account. We also know that there's still a paucity of data on women vets, so we need to see more statistics gathered. And also, as we know, women are increasingly participating in ground combat positions, and so we need to make sure that the VA of the future can take care of the types of injuries that may result from that.
Right. I was a little surprised, I guess, when you in your literature it says that nearly 2.5 million women have served or are continuing to serve in the military.
Exactly. I think that is often a little known fact, and there are about 385,000 active duty women today. It's projected even by the Department of Defense that which is now about 15% of all military personnel, and it's projected that by 2025 it could grow to 25%. And then the other, I think, relatively little known fact is that while the number of male veterans is actually declining, the number of female veterans is actually increasing. So, you know, when you add up about 2.2 million women veterans, you know, we get to what we think is a very influential group of women.
Yes, you do. You start getting up into that critical mass that people will start,
exactly.
People start paying attention. And speaking of paying attention, I know you've got a big day coming up on Veterans Day, and so I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about Day for the Brave.
Well, we were invited to participate in this event. It's the first time that it's being held. I will be the first to admit I'm not that familiar with crowdfunding. We hear about it a lot for businesses, but there is an organization called Razoo that is a crowdfunding site for nonprofits. And so they have created the Day for the Brave and invited veterans organizations, including SWAN, to participate. And what it is it's basically a 24-hour online giving event, not dissimilar to the Tuesday, Charity Tuesday that we hear about, you know, in December.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so it's very easy to participate, and there are also a lot of prizes that corporations are giving to organizations that raise the most funds. So obviously, SWAN is hoping that we generate a lot of direct online donations, which then would also make us, be a candidate for some of the prizes.
So if we want to donate money, how do we do this?
So you can go to www.dayforthebrave.org. And you'll see that there are a lot of very worthy veteran-focused nonprofits on that page. I would ask if you could please scroll till you find the Service Women's Action Network. And then it's very easy to give. I think you can give for as little as $10. And it's actually possible to start now. You don't have to wait until Veterans Day, but it's all accumulated and anything that's given from now through Veterans Day goes toward the prize pool.
Okay. Yeah, and it said that in reading again that there's going to be a prize pool, and whoever generates the most money or probably has the most activity, that you're going to get a prize, and most of the prizes look like they're going to be cash.
Exactly.
Which is even better. I am technically challenged, let's put it that way, myself. So it says it's a hashtag Day for the Brave. So I'm guessing that people that know how to do that can go directly to the site. But again, the website is dayforthebrave.org. Scroll down until you come to the Service Women's Action Network and make a donation. And as you go back up the scroll, you can make donations to other organizations as well.
That's right.
How's
that's
that?
Right. As long as SWAN is first, we don't discriminate. So.
No. Well, hopefully that you will reach your goal. And it sounds, Judy, like I would love to have you back on the program on another date to find out how you did, but also to find out more about your organization, because we don't want to, now that you do have this critical mass of numbers, we can't ignore the women that have served. And especially those that are going to be going into the service again, it's just like we tell our men, you know, if you don't treat the women right today, they're not going to enlist tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. Well, I would welcome the opportunity to speak with you again.
Well, thank you very much, Judy Patterson from the Service Women's Action Network, or SWAN. Thank you for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say,
the brave men of the Green Beret.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and no, we're not going to be talking to the Green Berets today, but I thought it would be an appropriate tune because we are going to be talking with a gentleman, Gary Proffitt, from Walmart Corporation about their Veterans Transition Program. Gary, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Well, Dale, thank you so much for having me back.
Well, so tell me what Walmart is up to.
Well, we're very excited to have launched last Monday Green Light a Vet, a national campaign designed to shine a light on America's veterans and actively appreciate them by green lighting them as valuable members of the community.
Well, I noticed that when people go to the Walmart site and look for jobs for veterans and things, it's on the transitioning page, right? It's for WalmartCareersWithAMission.com, right?
Well, you can go to a site, www.greenlightavet.com, and learn a great deal about Green Light a Vet, and see that we've already found almost 400,000 supporters of the campaign and well on the way to sparking the movement that we seek to achieve.
Okay, so this green lighting event is telling a story about these veterans who have come home and have transitioned into being civilians, and many of them look like business owners.
Well, we and I should thank you also for highlighting WalmartCareersWithAMission.com. It is a very important resource for those who are transitioning and looking for jobs and careers as they move forward with the rest of their lives. But Green Light a Vet is intended to shine a light on veterans from all generations and recognize them for the community, valuable community members that they are.
Well, I think it's interesting when you're talking about it, I finally figured out how to get to the right spot here on it. The Green Light a Vet is it is a web. Oh, you got 398,924 people who have shown their support already.
How about that?
That's pretty amazing. I wish we could get that many to to support what we're up to too. But so how do we go about? Oh, it just went up two more. How do we get listed? Or apply or become involved in the Green Light a Vet program?
Well, there are a couple of ways that we think people can become involved. Clearly, you can register on our counter merely by going to that site and pressing the support tab. But we think that activating this campaign, there are four or five different ideas that one might consider. First, hire one or help a veteran find a job. Second, volunteer or serve with veterans groups in your local community. How about starting a mentor-mentee relationship with a returning veteran or raising awareness on social media? Or simply signal our appreciation by changing a porch light to green.
That's interesting. Because it should have done that last night.
Well, it would probably have been certainly a periodic for Halloween.
That's right. That's what I was thinking. But so the idea is to become involved and to assist these veterans in any way that we can, and also to let these veterans know that there are civilians out there that support them. Is that right?
Absolutely. We think that that the national conversation should focus entirely on these folks who have served and sacrificed for their nation and now have returned to our communities as very productive and very valuable community assets. And that's the spotlight that we want to shine.
Well, speaking of a spotlight, I see that you're going to be participating in the Veterans Day Parade in New York.
Actually, a part of this activation is to show a particular focus on Fifth Avenue as a part of the New York City Veterans Day Parade, and hopefully we can add to the supporters and build even a stronger movement.
Well, I think it's a great program, and I want you to tell us in a minute what else Walmart does to help veterans transitioning back. If I'm looking for a job, can Walmart help me out?
Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of that. We're proud to have green-lighted our 100,000th hire as a part of the Walmart Veterans Welcome Home Commitment since full implementation on Memorial Day of 2013. So a little over 2 years, we've hired more than 100,000 veterans. And that's a start on our commitment that we recently to which we recently recommitted to hire 250,000 veterans by 2020.
Wow.
And importantly, we also know that successful transition requires more than just that opportunity. And so our Walmart Foundation has committed $20 million through 2019 to support veteran job training, education, and innovative public-private partnerships based on communities. And we try and address those challenges our veterans face and our military families face when returning to the civilian workforce in their communities.
Well, I would certainly recommend the people to check out Walmart if you are coming back and you're looking for employment. They seem to have a lot of different kinds of opportunities. I know a couple of family members of mine are involved with Walmart, and they're not just, you know, working in the stores. They've moved up out of that area into other branches of the company. And I also encourage people to go to greenlightavet.com to find out more information about how you can get involved in this program. And it sounds like the country is really coming around their veterans, and we're very so happy and excited to see this happen to this generation of veterans that are coming home.
Well, and I have to thank you once again, as I have in the past, for your leadership with your listeners to kind of green light in your own very special way our veterans and their families in our communities.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And we'll be in touch. I was talking to somebody the other day that you guys have a studio down there in Bentonville, and, you know, you never know. Go down there and do a live show.
Oh, we would invite you to do that.
I'll take you up on that. Thank you very much, Gary Proffitt from Walmart Corporation. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my pleasure. All right, well, we got about 4 minutes. 3 minutes. Okay. I got everybody over there waving their fingers at me, and I've got Tom White back here in the studio with me, who might want to pop on his mic again. Let's remind the people of what's coming up on Veterans Day here in Ann Arbor.
On Veterans Day, go to vetsatthehill.org. You will find out all about a musical tribute to our veterans, including the stories of our veterans that highlight from the World War II era all the way to the current era over in Fallujah, et cetera.
And is there a price to get in, or is this all
it's
free?
Absolutely
totally free.
Donations
are welcome, I'm sure.
If you go to the website at vetsatthehill.org, you'll find a place to do that. We are having a VIP event prior to, and if you donate $100, you can come to that event.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we got to donate money to a lot of things coming up in the next couple of weeks, and it's pretty exciting. I want to remind people, in addition to going to Vets at the Hill, on the Hill, on Veterans Day on the 11th, there is also another program here in Ann Arbor that will be held at Concordia College.
Yeah,
that's a big program. I remember one year they brought in a Chinook, which, of course, being a rotor head myself, I thought was really exciting. And so I would encourage you to do that. I know that the VA hospital has a ceremony beginning, I believe, at 9 o'clock on Veterans Day. Also, reminder to many veterans out there, Veterans Day is the day you get to eat. And this is a lot of free food, as one of them is Applebee's. And I believe we've got a list of about 20 of them that we're going to put up on our website, including the Golden Corral, I think it's called, and some other family restaurants out there. Yes, sir.
And just so you know, veterans events at University of Michigan started today with the wheelchair basketball game. The Army versus Navy, Army won today. Secondly, there's an entire week of events coming up at U of M, which is just vets.umich.edu.
Okay. And I know that I've been invited to be on a panel discussion at 2 o'clock on the 9th.
Yes.
At Michigan League.
Yes.
And so we'll be up. We'll be over at our campus again. And until next week. Next week, oh, by the way, hey, folks, come on to the party. Next week is 12 years Veterans Radio has been on the air. We strongly encourage you to call in, send us emails, let us know how you what you think about Veterans Radio, and we'll read about them on the air. And I'm excited to be with Bob next week, and I'm hoping that all of you will join us here on Veterans Radio. So as we're doing their countdown, look at these guys. They're over there. I guess everybody knowing sign language. Anyway, so until next week, you are dismissed.